This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney. More than 3 years after an underground pipeline ruptured, releasing about 20,000 gallons of crude oil at Oak Glen Nature Preserve in Hamilton County, efforts to restore the preserve's habitat are still underway. And joining us to talk about the damage caused by the oil leak and what's being done to help restore Oak Glen Nature Preserve are Great Parks of Hamilton County Executive Director Jack Sutton and Natural Resources Director Brett Henninger. And you can join us 513-419-7100. You can email talk at wvxu.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. And Jack and Brett, thank you so much for being here today. We really appreciate it.
Thanks for having us.
Yep. Happy to be here.
Jack, as a point of reference, where is Oak Glen and what's it like?
Oak Glen is located in Coleraine Township. It resides on the hillsides overlooking the Great Miami River. Great Parks acquired the first part of Oak Glen in 1999, and we've expanded the land acquisition since that period of time. It's a 402-acre conservation area managed for biodiversity, wildlife habitat, and green space.
Okay. So where does the pipeline run in relation to the park itself?
Well, it actually is adjacent to the property. So where the actual rupture occurred wasn't even on the conservation property itself. It was a little bit uphill, contiguous to one of our boundaries. And when the oil pipeline ruptured, the subsequent oil then drained down into a ravine, into a pristine creek area, and ultimately ended up in a wetland at the bottom of a 3,000-foot-long stream corridor.
And this created just a huge mess, apparently, from what I'm hearing.
It has been a challenge. Yeah. It sure has. It was discovered by our park rangers on March 17, 2014, and for the 4, 6, 8 weeks following was the emergency cleanup involving EPA, Coleraine Township Fire Department, Board of Health, Great Parks, Ohio EPA, U.S. Fish and Wildlife, a whole array of regulatory agencies were involved.
Were you also getting calls from neighbors around the preserve saying, what's that smell?
Well, I think that's how it was initially identified. Yeah. Some neighbors smelled what they thought was diesel or motor oil, eventually contacted our rangers, and when they did a foot inspection, they actually discovered the oil itself.
So tell me about the early response to this. You were talking about all the agencies that were involved in this. What was the effort like? What was the work like?
The early days were really just trying to contain the oil and recover as much of the oil product. So Sunoco and its consultants were spending a great deal of time with vacuum trucks, just trying to capture as much of the oil after the pipeline was shut off. So there were a couple of modifications made to the area. There was a containment dam built so that everything that ran down the hill from the pipeline ended up in one pool and it was easy to recover. So that's kind of how the first couple of months really were spent, was getting what product they could, as much of the oil, because as much as that as you can get early on means a quicker recovery over time.
And how much damage did this cause, Brett? I mean, what damage does it do in terms of the habitat itself?
Well, I like to think of it as there's two components. There's a chemical component, so the actual contamination of the oil itself. And then there is what was damaged during the recovery process. And so no one's disputing that you needed to go in and recover the product to what degree you could. But at some point, there's a line you don't want to cross. So, for instance, we want to recover as much of the oil as possible, but are we willing to denude the whole hillside in order to get to the oil? So we have to find where that line is and what's acceptable for ecological recovery, and sometimes it's more beneficial to the ecology to recover as much as you can early, but then allow some natural processes to get the small amount that remains. And some of that remains is actually in the rock formation that is in the soil profile of the hillside.
Any idea how much it was? It was 20,000 plus gallons. Any idea how much still remains in terms of the number of gallons?
That's not something I'm privy to. I'm sure there's a calculation out there. We know roughly how much is recovered, but some of that recovery is oil and soil mixed. Some of it's oil and water mixed. So it's kind of difficult to come up with an answer to that question.
And part of the cleanup really was flushing. So the decision was made early on that rather than a physical excavation of the soil and rock, They would just pipe water to the top of the slope and literally flush the creek, which really recovered a lot of the oil, but in itself changed the mechanical alignment of the stream, the geomorphology of the stream, a lot of the rocks. Literally every single rock in that stream bed had been turned over and physically washed or sanitized at some point in time.
That sounds like just painstaking work.
It was very laborious, very tedious, very labor-intensive, but it was the method they elected to use to get as much of the oil out as possible. And now it's part of the restoration effort of reconfiguring the stream alignment, the geomorphology, so that it functions as a more natural stream than, say, a drainage channel.
Now, was the pipeline there before Hamilton County Parks bought the
Yes, the that land? Pipeline was, like many of the old infrastructure in the Midwest, it was built in 1950. Mm-hmm. So it has been in place ever since that period of time, transporting Texas crude oil to northern Ohio and southern Michigan.
So what kind of damage did this cause for the plant life and the habitat?
Well, there's a lot of the flushing operations, first of all, took a lot of soil with it. So that caused a lot of the trees that were holding the stream banks to actually come down, or they, during the process, had to be removed in order to get as much of the oil product out of the soil. So that's one component. Another component is that with all of the disturbance in the area, we've seen that some invasive plants that were not on the site have appeared where there was a lot of disturbance from the recovery of the oil or from the emergency response activities. So this site prior to had a very good flora and fauna assemblage. It's very mature oak hickory forest in at least the original preserve area. So we knew that that was very high quality. And unfortunately, soon after, we started seeing bad players like Japanese stilt grass, which is a very invasive grass, start to invade areas of the preserve, and that's a big concern for us.
And those are tracked in by workers, right?
Yeah, they can be, and they also spread on their own once they get established. So sometimes an opening in the canopy allows, the seed source is nearby, so it's being tracked in by workers or equipment.
Did this, what kind of damage did this do for animals in the habitat?
Yeah, we believe it had an impact on the amphibian population mostly. These are smaller streams, so they're not in, even prior to the spill, they likely did not have fish population in them, but they are very important areas for reproduction of amphibians, so like streamside salamanders. One that we're very concerned about is a cave salamander. It's a state endangered amphibian. It only occurs in three counties in Ohio. Hamilton County is one of them. And this preserve had a very good population of those salamanders. So that's our biggest concern.
513-419-7100 if you'd like to join our conversation. And we will continue that discussion about the restoration effort at Oak Glen Nature Preserve. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney. Joining us to discuss the damage caused by a 2014 oil leak and what's being done to help restore Oak Glen Nature Preserve are Great Parks of Hamilton County Executive Director Jack Sutton and Natural Resources Director Brett Henninger. You can join us, 513-419-7100. You can email talk at wvxu.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. How fast, after that leak was discovered, how quickly did teams get on the scene? Was the response pretty fast, Jack?
It was amazing. I think credit needs to be given to U.S. EPA, Ohio EPA, U.S. Fish and Wildlife. The U.S. EPA was literally on site within 24 hours, and they are prepared for these kind of hazmat incidents, and they really took control of the entire operation in terms of command and control, emergency response, coordinating all the necessary stakeholders and players, and it was really became their total responsibility, I would say, for the first 6 to 8 weeks. And so we would work with them, but they really know how to handle emergencies like this, and they handled it very effectively. Sunoco was at the table, also taking care of their responsibilities. And then follow-up to that, in the last several years, Ohio EPA and U.S. Fish and Wildlife have been very strong partners with Great Parks in ensuring that the restoration plans are done to meet all of our requirements, all of our expectations, and that the maintenance and monitoring, which will occur for the next 10 years, will continue to meet the requirements of those plans that have been approved by Ohio EPA, U.S. Fish and Wildlife, and Great Parks.
Is the pipeline still active?
Oh, yes.
Okay.
It was probably put back into operation within 7 to 10 days.
So what is Sunoco doing to make sure that this doesn't happen again?
Well, it's our understanding that they are required to have ongoing maintenance and monitoring of all of their pipeline infrastructure, be it in-pipe monitoring or external monitoring of the right-of-ways. And so I think all these major utility companies have regulatory requirements that they are responsible to follow.
Again, 513-419-7100 if you'd like to join our conversation. Brett, how much disruption to the environment did the work cause? You had all these crews in there. You had heavy equipment, I imagine, in there that was moving in and out. So that alone had an impact, I would take it.
Oh, it did. And part of the story here is just activity from the staging area. So there's a meadow that is at the bottom of the hill where a lot of the response was staged, which also was a meadow that where lark sparrows, which is a state endangered species, was a nesting bird in that meadow. So, you know, we did not see the lark sparrow come back afterwards. So that's going to be part of the restoration going forward from here, is how do we, in restoration planning, make that field so it takes it back to the state it was back in 14, and would bring ultimately the lark sparrows back to nest in that site. So that's something we're going to be watching really closely.
So the cleanup is considered completed at this point. Now it's a matter of restoration work. Is that how it stands at this point?
Yeah, I mean, when you say cleanup, it's a degrees of clean, I would say, you know. So I think there's going to be oil in the rock formation in the preserve for many, many years to come. It might be even decades. But we've come to a point, like I had mentioned earlier, with our state and federal partners, that we're understanding that that's going to be there and it's going to impact the preserve from a water quality standpoint and possibly from a habitat standpoint. So I guess when you say cleanup, I bristle a little bit, but we're okay. We get to the point of diminishing returns. So
yeah, but technically we're at the restoration point.
We
now.
Are. We
That's have turned, correct to say.
We have turned a corner, and the physical restoration of the site has begun.
What's the restoration process? What's involved in that?
Well, step one is, again, getting the stream to function as a natural stream once again. It had been 2 years of flushing and remediation. So it's understanding the hydrology, getting the meanders put back in place, in-stream structures that would then help natural biology repopulate itself. So that's part of the whole overall approach, is get the stream geomorphology, the hydrology stable to withstand our unusual weather events, and then allow biology, the little critters, the salamanders, the food chain items, repopulate to basically regenerate life back in the stream corridor.
And Brett, how much are you going to have to rely on the natural process to help in this?
Well, that's a good question. I think we're going to have to let the biology tell us as it recovers. So the first component we'll see come back will be things like insect larvae in the stream, and some insects that live under the rocks in the stream are sensitive to pollutants. Others are not. So we've already seen some of the not so sensitive species start to return. So that'll be something we're going to just have to document over time, and that'll be done through metrics that are in restoration planning.
Are you seeing signs, though, little by little, that things are getting back to normal as much as they possibly can?
You know, I think I believe so. And when I started to see trees show up, and we're planting, you know, the consultants for Sunoco are planting trees, restoring areas that did have trees that had to be removed. I think that's a good sign. The fact that we did see a few species of invertebrates is a good sign. So it is moving forward, but it doesn't occur on our timeline. So a lot of this is based on a calculation of how much oil we might think there is out there still. So, and that's probably just theoretical.
So this sounds like this is really a long-term process. There's no easy fix to this.
No, and it's really a study in itself. We know that the restoration hopefully will be wrapped up later this year. The spring storms have caused a little bit of problem with some of the physical work in the stream that has to be repaired. But ideally, the restoration is wrapped up this year. Then the Sunoco is responsible for 10 years of maintenance and monitoring, and to make sure that the design, stream restoration, and those habitat restorations perform the way they were intended by the design. And it's going to be sort of an education process going forward. And then Great Parks will continue to monitor this, you know, for literally decades to come, because it becomes a literal laboratory that hopefully others across the country should have similar occurrences, maybe would look to Great Parks for some advice on, so when this happens, how is the best way to treat a restoration project like this in the future?
So when you talk about monitoring, are you talking about video monitoring or people actually going on site and looking, or how's that going to work?
Yeah, good question. Some of it is just looking, checking for the presence or absence of a species of bug or aquatic insect or salamander. Some of it is going to be how well do salamanders reproduce on the site now. So it might be looking at how many salamander larvae are found, and also how many mature and make it to maturity and then go back out into the forest floor, which is what a lot of these species' life habits are, that they reproduce in the stream and then they spend their life in the forest floor. So
it sounds like some of that will have to be just somebody actually going out and looking around.
Yeah. So the consultants that work for Sunoco are going to be charged with monitoring this, the resource. So some of it is water quality based, and so it's chemical constituents in the water. But a lot of it, the really important stuff, is documenting the biota. You know, what critters come back, and that tells the story of, are we there, you know, to a point, or where we were in 14, or are we still shy?
And part of that is documenting the vegetative restoration. So The consultants know how many trees per acre they're planting. We have an estimate of what the survivability of that should be when you plant X number of trees per acre. So those are the kind of things you can physically count. So somebody will do that on an annual basis and visually monitor biodiversity within the forest, within the meadow, be able to look for that lark sparrow habitat. Once it's completed, will we see the lark sparrow come back? Do we need to do more to enhance that or encourage that to occur?
Jack, for someone who visits the park, are there certain parts that are not accessible because of this? Or,
well, this is one of our four conservation areas. So we manage four separate properties purely for biodiversity, wildlife conservation, and we leave them in a very pristine condition. There's no parking lot. There's no trails. They are public land. They are accessible, but we really don't provide any developed accommodations. Oakland, because of the oil spill, because of the work that's been going on, has technically been closed to the public because it's an active remediation and restoration project. Once that's complete, we can certainly make arrangements, especially to education groups, school groups, natural resource stewards, and so forth, to conduct tours and that kind of thing. But as a conservation area, it's truly there for scientific benefit and purpose.
But you say you have four other preserves
mm-hmm.
in the park system.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And the other three, I guess, are accessible more
yes.
so than this one. Okay.
Yes. And, we have 21 parks and preserves. So four of those 21 are these conservation areas that are maintained for science and biodiversity.
Are there any other pipelines that are near park property or across park property?
Well, Hamilton County is a very urban county when you think about physical infrastructure. So we've actually double-checked that. We probably have close to 10 linear miles of pipelines crossing park property. They might be crude oil pipelines. They could be natural gas pipelines. They could be conveying diesel or gasoline. But living in an urban environment such as Hamilton County, Cincinnati, there are a lot of underground utilities.
So what are your hopes for Oakland?
Well, certainly that we complete the restoration project this year, that it is successful and we start to see very quickly that biota return and the wildlife return and become a little bit more stable. That's number one. And then I think long term, we start to see the more rare and uncommon things repopulate.
Yeah, and I would add to that too that, you know, the opportunity I think Jack mentioned earlier was that this is going to be an educational resource for future generations. So, for instance, it's very difficult to find information on toxicity to amphibians. Well, maybe this is a case study that will contribute to the science literature on recovery from a environmental disaster like this. So the hope is it becomes a higher benefit. I guess that's what I would add.
So out of something bad, you get some good things coming out of this,
right?
Hopefully.
Yeah. Right.
So does it ever completely get back to what it was before the spill?
Very difficult question. So you know, if you consider that the original part of that preserve had, 80-year-old forest, we're not going to be able to restore 80-year-old forest for, obviously, for 80 years. So I think it's a time loss benefit or a loss of service over time. So I guess we truly can't ever get back to where it was in that case, in some cases. But I do have hope that there's a process now that's going to get us steered in that right direction. So we are going to lose something overall, but I think, we're headed in the right direction.
Jack, what do you think?
Well, I think it'll be decades. It's the kind of event that there aren't many examples of it across the country, an oil spill such as this in a nature preserve. So we're very unique. It will be a learning lab for us, and hopefully it will benefit others. But I think all of the experts we've talked to, that our expectation it will take really decades to get it close to what it was.
Mm-hmm. We got an email from Mary. She wondered, how's the cleanup being paid for?
Sunoco is responsible for that and have been incurring those costs all along.
Okay. And they just settled with the park system recently, didn't they?
We did enter into a settlement agreement, and there were three main components. One, that they must complete plans in accordance with OEPA, U.S. Fish and Wildlife, and Great Parks, that they implement those plans. And then finally, they did reimburse Great Parks for our direct costs through the first several years of the incident.
Brett and Jack, thank you so much for joining us this afternoon. Really appreciate it.
Thanks, Mark.
Thank you.
Great Parks of Hamilton County Executive Director Jack Sutton and Natural Resources Director Brett Henninger. WVXU's Tana Weingartner reported on the oil leak and the restoration efforts at Oak Glen Nature Preserve, and you can find a link to her stories at WVXU.org. Coming up, we're going to hear about a new program to teach kids about money and finances. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU.